up, everybody, and welcome to Caffeination 299. Yes, this is Big Caffeination 299, next on stop for our huge 300th episode. Well, not really huge in the traditional sense of the word. It's probably going to be right around the same amount of time as all the other episodes that we try and put out are. But it's huge in that it's a milestone, and we try and celebrate them. We're still trying to find the right way to do it. Whatever it is, I'm actually going to announce it on the 300th episode this year, as opposed to doing it for the 300th episode. We're going to try and switch things up for a little bit. Get people back into the groove of things as the new year starts off, right? This is the first episode of 2009. So this podcast was originally started in 2006. It would have been started in 2005 if I could have gotten that intro music right, but it just didn't work out. So on January 9th, 2006, the episode Caffeination 001 debuted, and we are now at Caffeination 299. I was actually really happy when I got to the three digits, because it got a little bit weird when I kept saying zero in front of everything, and people kept asking me, why are you doing that? You know, you're only on show 20. You're not on show 020. Well, you know, if you put three digits in there, you're pretty much shooting for that as a goal, as a milestone, so I should probably, right around Caffeination 500, I'm guessing I should probably start doing 0500, so you shoot for the 1,000. Yeah, that's many years off from now. The 1,000th episode would probably be 10 years after I started it, in which case that would be a huge long run. But that's not what you came to listen to today. You came to listen to the Caffeination Podcast. We are all about caffeine culture and technology news. I try and give you the most caffeinated technology that you will have in your listening day. So this podcast, and all the other podcasts, just like it with better jokes, though, I promise on that one, are over at www.caffeination.com. That is caffeination.com. Being this is the Caffeination Podcast, we felt that it was a good place to hang out. Yeah, we are a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. All the other member shows have agreed to create child-safe, family-friendly, and educational content, and all of them and us are located, lovingly listed, over www.techpodcast.com. We're also a proud member of the Blueberry Podcast Network. It's kind of like MySpace for podcasts. And last but most certainly not least, the Caffeination is a Puzzle Piece production. To find out more about what that means, head on over to puzzlepiecepro.com. All right, all that little stuff out of the way, we have a great episode lined up for you today. On today's show, you're going to hear about any and all of the following topics: the new year, Legos, Mars, history, coffee, hedgehogs, Apple coffee again, because, you know, this is a Caffeination Podcast, coffee deserves to be in there twice, and fun. That's what we're aiming for here on today's show. That's not a really heavy-handed episode. There's a relatively good mix between the tech cruft and the caffeine and food section. So just in case you are unfamiliar with this podcast, my name is Paul Muller. I am your host through, I think, every single episode we've ever done. I don't think I've had very many other people on this show. I've done a couple interviews here and there, but it's pretty much just me talking and you hopefully enjoying what I'm saying. The show's broken up traditionally into two different sections. The first is the Tech Cruft section. First of all, I do not actually explain this on every show, so, you know, this is few and far between, just in case we picked up any new listeners. This is a way of just kind of clearing the air so you understand how things roll around here. I do two shows a week, yeah, believe it or not. I actually do a show on Sunday night and Wednesday night, so you can get it on Monday morning and Thursday morning, unless you're up really late or you're in a different time zone and everything rocks out that way. So I am on the Eastern Seaboard, specifically in Philadelphia. I am an employee of Temple University, so it is a kind of great little segue into what the show is actually done here. This is separated into two different sections. The first being Tech Cruft, the section being the second section being the caffeine and food section. Tech Cruft is all the different news and information, little offbeat news stories that I find somehow relating to technology or geeky living, and they're all listed as Cruft because Cruft is a kind of piece of computer refuse. It's not really junk. It's not really, you know, any of the other different terms you might use for stuff you no longer want. It's just bits of randomness floating around. And the second is the caffeine and food section. It was originally just the caffeinated bits, but it's sort of developed into an all things foodie and somewhat geeky section. I actually do some recipes here and now on the Caffeination Podcast. Every once in a while, you'll get one of them popping up. And I like to share that on the caffeine and food section. It helps to soothe my inner Food Network personality. I like to kind of have a different dialogue running through the show. I try and set all the different stories up so they make some kind of cohesive story by the end, and you can kind of see where my mind was, if anywhere, on a given day. I would like to thank you. If you are new to the Caffeination Podcast, thank you so much for spending your time with us. It is a really kind of an interesting journey we've been on so far through all 299 numbered episodes here. We really, really value any comments and feedback you feel free on sending in. You can do so at caffeination@gmail.com, or you can give us a call on our listener line. You can Skype us, and all the other information that you'd find out on how to do all that is actually listed over at caffeination.com. We already talked about all that, so we're not going to go over all that, because, I mean, seriously, you don't really need to have me talking about that on today's show. The other two things that are listed at the top of every episode are the back channel. Basically, I find strange, crazy stories all the time when I'm researching the shows, or people just send them into me. The ones that I know just won't fit into a Caffeination episode, or I just think are really crazy and I need to remember them for later, I'll end up on my Tumblr, or however you're actually supposed to say that. It's caffeination.tumblr.com. T-U-M-B-L-R.com. So caffeination.tumblr.com has the traditional Web 2.0 missing vowel syndrome, and then the second little thing is the RSS feed for this podcast. It's not just the podcast, it's everything coming out on the Caffeination website. I have a couple other websites. You can find all them out on the links over at the Caffeination homepage. Hopefully that's enough of a primer for everybody. Hopefully you the new year has treated you right, that you all find that the year of 2009 has found you all happy, healthy, or at least headed in that general direction. Here at the Caffeination Lair, we find ourselves three happy people all living together between myself, my wife, and my young son. Everybody's doing quite well so far. I'm heading back to work for the first time in quite some time, and it's just kind of a lovely little mental break. And I gotta tell you, I don't know what happened, but I really kind of hit a wall sometime in the middle of December, and I was just grouchy, and I just feel refreshed. I feel energized. I took a one episode break from the actual podcast. We didn't produce an episode last Wednesday on New Year's Eve, even though it's traditionally something that I would do because it's a Wednesday night. It's just I had to take a break, had to take a step back. I didn't even Twitter much. twitter.com/caffeination if that's your bag. It's just something that just kind of, you know what, I needed to take a step back. I barely checked my email. I spent most of the time vegging out, playing with my kid, and you know, hanging out with my wife. That was my break. And you know what, I feel fantastic for having done it. But that's not what you came to hear to listen to hear about. You came to hear about all the stuff that I talked about earlier, so we're going to dive right on into the TechCruft section here. First and foremost, there's a story over on CNN. It's a video story, but I'm going to give you the long and the short of it. There's a gentleman who loves hedgehogs, a kid by the name of Jonathan, I'm sorry, started playing Sonic the Hedgehog when he was 11 years old. Loved the character, fell in love with it, and he really, really wanted a hedgehog for, Christmas, birthday, whatever. And his parents couldn't get him one because the place he lives in, they don't actually mention the town that he lives in Kansas, actually outlawed hedgehogs. There used to be a series of books put out called Crazy Laws that I had to read for a class in middle school, and they're really funny. Like, you couldn't grow chickens in bottles in one town. You couldn't tie an alligator to a fire hydrant. And apparently, in whatever town this kid lives in Kansas, you couldn't own a hedgehog. So what did this little 10-year-old do when his mom got off the hook by saying, you know what, I'm sorry, but hedgehogs are illegal. You cannot own them in a town. Well, he said, well, how do I go about making them legal? So for the next 3 years, he researched everything you could possibly do about lobbying and petitioning city council, and he actually got them to put it on the docket. He wrote them a letter, and get this, 9 months or 11 months later, they actually put it on the docket. They talked about it. He presented to them hedgehog facts and basically asked them what they had against the beasts. And nothing. They had nothing. They couldn't come up with a good reason as to why they were banned. So they are they're now legal in his little town. I just thought it was an awesome little story to lead off the show because, hey, it has a little video game tie-in, and it also really kind of shows you an educational experience. The kid started out, hit a brick wall, you know, something that every parent would kind of look towards and say, yes, they're illegal. I don't have to get him a hedgehog. I don't have to worry about him taking care of it. But he found a way around it. And his mom got him a hedgehog for Christmas. The hedgehog's name is Little Lou, I think, from the news story. And it's a really, really cool story. So I just thought I'd pass it along to you. And that kind of dovetails into the next little story, which is an article from over at device.com, Canine Treadmill for Inactive Owners of Active Dogs. This is a treadmill for your dog. That's correct. Now, when I'm looking at this, I think of, you know what, the person who thought of this was probably a very well-meaning person and said, you know what, there's a certain segment of society who is simply unable to walk either their active dogs or their dogs at all. You know, it's like if you have somebody who's in a wheelchair, if you have the elderly people, and it's not right to have the dog just laying around. You want to make sure that it still gets enough exercise. If I had one of these, I'd probably put my cats on it. But instead, we have a laser pointer. We just play with that, and they run around and plow into walls and everything. It's hilarious, seriously. But when I'm looking at this, I'm like, you know, this was probably a really good idea. And it could have possibly come about with somebody saying, you know what, I think I have a way to help people. You know, people who have active dogs like border collies and stuff like that, and they're stuck in the city. First of all, if you live in the city and you want a border collie, unless you have huge tracts of land, do not get one. It's just not a good thing. So for three sizes of dogs, either you can get the $550, the $700, or the $900. Yes, it's pretty much just a treadmill. You could probably save yourself a ton of money by buying a regular treadmill, using it yourself, and somehow it got sort of wedged into the tools for the rich, because it was originally found from a website called bornrich.com bornrich.org, sorry. It's one of those things where it's like, you know what, if you're that kind of person who has to have a dog and you still want to get it walked, I personally, when we were watching my in-laws' dogs, I love the fact that, you know, I had to go out and walk it. I know people are saying, you know, it's not really good in the rain and everything. You know what, it was a time to kind of step away from everything. You walk the dog, and I know it would have probably gotten old after a little while, but if we ever end up getting a dog, I'm not going to worry about walking it like that. It's just, this is one of those gadgets where I really think it's kind of, it's really sad. It's a sad state of society that we live in if something like this gets reported on, even by myself. But alright, next little thing up here, there's a little bit of a fuss coming up over the Star Wars clock. Everybody's saying that it's fleecing fans. Yeah. There's an Etsy seller called Ewan Geek that's created this $90 custom-made clock out of vintage Star Wars spaceships. So basically, it's a lovely looking stainless steel and clear clock. They put Star Wars logo across the center of it. Of course, it's not licensed because it's on Etsy. Etsy's a place where you put your own crafts up. And then they glued different Star Wars figurines around it. You know what? I would honestly pay for something like this, but not $90. That's much more excessive than it has to be. I mean, depending on where you got these limited edition pewter figurines or whatever it is, I mean, I could see something like this being an officially licensed product somewhere. The only thing is, I'm looking at the placement of the actual ships that they have there, and I'm wondering if there's any kind of reason that the 12 would be one thing, or the Millennium Falcon, for instance, is 7. If you have something like that, the Millennium Falcon or an X-Wing or a TIE Fighter, you'd kind of want the really recognizable ships at the different points. I mean, I know they have, like, the Star Destroyer at the bottom at 6, because it's a very, you know, it's oblong, and it looks like it commands the presence on the wheel. But there's just the placement seems kind of sloppy overall. I'm not really sure if it's worth the price, but then again, it might be to you. The people over at Giz have given you a fun and fancy little way that you too can create your own. Step 1, find a clock. Step 2, find tiny figurines. Step 3, find glue. Step 4 is glue the results of step 2 onto the results on step 1 using the results of step 3. And there you go. You can save yourself a ton of money. So I'm pretty sure if you head to a hobby store or something like that, you can probably find some cheap Star Wars collectible pewter figurines or something like that. And you can probably find a nicer clock. So there you go. You can save yourself $90. Although I do think it's an interesting idea. And you know what? The 2009 is starting out in such a way where pretty much nobody has a ton of cash on hand. Nobody has, you know, extra money laying around to pay for this or that or worry about what kind of software. And one of the most common questions that I get, both in consulting, both at work, both everywhere, is what kind of free software solution? There people are looking for software solutions on how to fix things, how to find a way to get things like antivirus, and there's just these huge overbearing looming issue of the recession that everybody's kind of looking at. And if you don't have a job, obviously you're not going to be spending money that could be used on other things, on things like antivirus and stuff like that. Or you'd want to find a free way and see, as long as it's good, there's no reason that you shouldn't be using it. So there's a bunch of studies that have been done recently, and they're saying that 2009 is shaping up to actually be a very good year for Linux, in that Linux and most of the other open source software is free. So it does cost for support contracts for things like that, but if you have a set of staff in place to help you with these things, then it's really kind of a good situation to be in, because there's so much software out there that does so many different things that a lot of solutions are easily put together with free software. For instance, the free software that we're actually using for the firewall and the antivirus on my computer is actually using Komodo Internet Security for the firewall, and I'm using ClamWin AV for the antivirus. And both of them are working fantastic thus far. In fact, they find things that Norton usually doesn't. I have a joke screensaver that makes it look like you have a blue screen of death and actually pulls information out of your processor. And apparently, some of the heuristic algorithms that are in the different pieces of antivirus technology actually pick these out and say, you know what, these are not what they say they are, because it's faking a blue screen. So it says, you know what, this is trying to show something that isn't. So I was like, wow, that's really cool. Stop looking at that file, because it gets really irritating when you say I have a virus every 15 minutes, but, you know, thank you very much for picking that out. It gives me a little bit of a sense of security, even though you really shouldn't have one when you're playing around on the internet. But Linux and most other open source softwares are really kind of shaping up to have a banner year in 2009. So there's the article over at Slashdot is titled Recession versus GNU. So you can head on over there and check that out if that's something that you're interested in. It's one of the things that we like to play around with here at the Caffeination. We have a backup server in our garage that's running Ubuntu Linux, and it's backing up all the stuff from our PC, so it's nice and good, and it's interesting to have a family server. I'm actually showing my wife how to do stuff on Linux, and it's kind of fun, gotta tell you. All right, moving right along. Everybody likes to try and run older versions of things, you know, emulators and things like that. And one of the biggest issues of the Nintendo Wii that we have, first of all, I thought it could play DVDs. I guess I just kind of assumed, since the PlayStation 2 could play DVDs and the Xbox could play DVDs, the original Xbox, and the Xbox 360 could, and the PlayStation 3 all could play DVDs. In fact, some of them could even play other kinds of discs. That, you know, a Nintendo Wii, is it supposed to, you know, be set up and everything's done on DVD, it would be able to play DVDs. Well, no, they don't let you do that. So I was kind of irritated with that, and I found out that there's a whole huge community of people who are doing homebrew, which is basically homegrown applications and stuff and software that's supposed to run on the Nintendo Wii. You have to hack them in order to do it, but it's kind of an interesting little conglomeration of people who are all working together, and apparently somebody finally got an Apple IIe emulator for the Wii. So if you ever have any old video games or old things that you're used to do in the Apple IIe and you'd like to play them on your Nintendo Wii, I have the link up there, and I also have the link up to the Homebrew channel, so you can find out how you need to go around the security that Nintendo has put in place. There's a whole crazy cockamamie solution to actually doing it. From what I understand, the PlayStation 3 actually lets you do homebrew. It'll actually let you put your own written programs up there. Xbox is a closed system, but you know what? So far, it's worked fine for me, and I'm all right with that. I don't want to do anything that's going to get me banned off of Xbox Live. But the Wii hack might be something interesting to play out with. I'm not really sure what I'm going to do. I need to see the potential for console damage, because a lot of the people out there that are doing things, they say, oh, yeah, you know, if something happens, I'll just buy another one. That's not really an option around here. So if I do something, if I void a warranty, I better have a very reasonable assumption that nothing will happen to the actual hardware, that I'll actually be able to get it fixed, you know? So if something's already out of warranty and it's heavily used, I'm less likely to attempt to play around with it, because I can't replace it. So, alright, moving right along. Just kind of talking about the ways in which you work with things that are past their useful life cycle, which I do in work all the time. We've had 6 or 7 year old plotters that are running around, and they're out of support for the people who make them. Imagine spending $7,000 on a new piece of equipment only to have the company that made it 7 years later, even though it's in perfect working order, say, you know what, we're just not going to support that anymore. If you had bought the same thing, which is the exact same model number and everything, we just changed an A to a B, 2 years later, it would still be supported. So you have to kind of fiddle around and find a way to do it. You know, it's a little duct tape paradise every once in a while. But the NASA rovers have really kind of taken that to a whole new level. I know I kind of jumped from plotters to rovers, and we're talking multi-million-dollar things or $7,000 things. But the NASA rovers were originally designed and kind of projected to have a 90-day life cycles. They have been operational for 5 years now, and there's a great story over at the BBC that's talked all about the different discoveries they've made, both Spirit and Opportunity. They've had to really kind of overcome a lot of different obstacles. For instance, the right front wheel broke on one of them, so now it has to drive everywhere backwards. and another one had issues with solar... with its power because the dust actually covered the solar panels, so they had to wait for another storm to come by and kind of blow it off. But they're really kind of far exceeding anything anybody ever expected of them. So it's and there's no replacements on the way, so the scientists are really kind of having to duct tape from afar to see how things are actually going. They found some fascinating things, so I just wanted to pass along, first of all, the story over at the BBC, and second of all, the lovely little video that NASA kind of put together. It's the Mars Exploration Rovers, but Spirit and Opportunity gives you a quick little rundown and interviews with some of the people who worked on the projects. But it's really fun. I'm looking at them and saying, you know what? I remember when the Nintendo Entertainment System, the original Nintendo, the 8-bit gaming console that it was nearing the end of its life cycle. And Super Nintendo was already out, and they were just basically stopping making new games for these things. And I read an article in Wired and a couple other places that was talking about the same thing that said some of the best games were coming out at that point because of the limitations, because of the really strict limits on how everything was done. They had to get really creative to do new things. So some of the there was really deep gameplay, there was enriching environments that were being built, and they were all done with very limited resources. And this is kind of how I'm viewing the Mars rovers. It's, you know, they have a set of circumstances. They are up there with a certain amount of parts and pieces and everything to make everything work. So think about any video game any of you have ever played, and once you get to that certain point where it's like, okay, my guy is either running out of ammo or he's doing something else, you always find these little packages laying around where you can, you know, either get a new guy, and if you're talking about Mario Brothers, you can get new ammo if you're talking about a first-person shooter, or you could get a new gun or something else like that. You never get to the end where there's just no ammo at all. There, no matter how many enemies you kill or anything like that, there's just no ammo. Imagine that. That all of a sudden you have to find a way to innovate after a certain period of time. So that's where the Mars rovers are right now. And it's really kind of fascinating to see exactly how long they're going to be able to operate. I mean, because once you get a huge assortment of, once you get a huge inventory of anything, the gameplay tends to get a little sloppy, the way in which people operate tends to get sloppy, and if you look at how things are coded, how things are programmed, the larger the memory limits got, the much less people were focused on creating concise code, and they just wanted to make things that did it, and they wanted to get it out fast. Whereas if they had still had all the memory limits from older machines in place, then they probably would have spent a little bit more time optimizing their code. So it's really kind of an interesting little puzzle that NASA has put themselves in. So, alright, moving right along. There's something that I was not unaware of, but apparently universities are patenting student ideas, and this is something that is kind of understood and done with. But if you're an engineering student and you have what they have over at Slashdot titled a Eureka moment, and you create something fantastic, something good, something unbelievable, the university, since you used university resources to actually do this, can patent your idea, and you have nothing to say about this. Now, this is very similar to the fact that if you're working for a company and you come up with an idea and you're doing it on company time and you find all these other different little things out, that, you know, the company basically owns that idea. And I was looking at this and saying, you know what, it's similar to that in that you are using the resources of another entity. But I just don't agree with it because you're still paying them to go. You're paying them to learn. So you're paying them to the privilege of creating things for them. It just seems a little bit ridiculous. But at one point in time, they're saying that the university's patented on average 250 things per year, and now they're up to over 3,000 a year. So universities are starting to cash in on the patent craze that is out there. So it was just one of those things I looked at, and I was completely unaware of it, and thank whatever that I never had any really good ideas when I was in college. And if any engineering students or anything like that are out there and you have a really awesome idea, probably you should drop out. No, just kidding, but still. You'd kind of hope you'd be able to be rewarded for it. One of the things they talked about over at Slashdot was that a student came up with a fantastic idea. He went and the university actually patented it. And when he graduated, he tried to start a company, and he had to license his own technology from the company or from the university. It was just stunned. So I wanted to pass it along to you. So in case you are unaware, then now you have been made aware. All right, up on Gizmodo, they have a fantastic Lego diorama. I love Lego dioramas like this because they're done with... It's talking a little bit about like the piecemeal methodology from the Mars rover story. But this is not a kit. Somebody didn't go out and buy this kit. The gentleman by the name of Andrew created a Lego brewery. let me see. No, it's not Lego Middle Earth Brewery. He actually has a... actually has a series of different figurines. There's a giant ogre with a glowing eye, and there's just all these tiny little stories. If you ever watched Bob Ross paint a picture, the guy with the curly hair, he would talk about his happy little trees, and when he was painting streams and things like that, he would talk about maybe little trout lives back here. There's so many different stories that are actually in this that it's awesome. And it's a painting with Legos. So to see this is kind of fun. He's named all the different little characters, and if you can click around on some of the different links, you can actually see different Lego minifigs of questionable morals. There's actually a female dancing at the brewery, and there's a pole involved. But it's interesting to see how the person who is involved in creating this really got kind of off the wall. There's a little dwarf who's off to the one side of one of the mountains who's kind of passed out in a little alcove. The dancer actually has a motor to make her go around. There's a light brick inside the ogre's helmet to actually make his eye light up. It's really, really cool, so I just thought I'd pass it along. All right, next thing we have up here is a German Lego story. I don't know what it is because I lost the original link for it, so I'm horribly sorry, but I just wanted to send this. This is a colonial ship. That's what I remember from the first thing. So this is supposed to be a space colonizing vehicle. I don't know if it's from anything because I can't read the German that's up there. I can read some German, not a lot, but I'm looking at this, and the only thing I got is that it's between October of 2007 and March of 2008, he actually built this, but it is massive. I can't even begin to look at the scale of it other than the fact that in one of the pictures, he has his cat going through. And it's one of those things where if you really wanted to, you could create your own little story involved in this. This thing looks to be about 15 or 20 feet long, and it's beautiful in the detail that actually went into it. There's the giant ship itself that actually drops off the different colony vessels, and then there's a space station or a port or something like that that's sitting there, and it's just really, really well done. And I gotta tell you, if the cat hadn't been involved, I wouldn't have been able to pick out exactly what it was. Alright, moving right along, we have a new Lego story on a Lego concept Apple desktop. Now this is different dream prototypes from over at Mac Life, where they actually built a concept Mac out of Legos, and they said this would be a great thing to do for Mac in the future because you can plug and play all the different little parts you want. They're missing two different things here. First of all, in order for it to be an Apple product, it has to be one cohesive design structure, so all of the pieces would be the same color, first of all. So we're just going to move beyond that. Second of all, you wouldn't have to have any of those little Lego bumps across the top because everybody can use a Lego bump. Everybody can use the traditional little bricks. They would have to be Apple-specific Legos that you would need to use to create your casing or any of the other things you'd like to build off the side of this. If they were shaped like tiny little apples, or just something so that they could jerry-rig it so that you wouldn't be able to use other things with their product, then it might be an Apple product. And I'm not saying that with any kind of bit of malice or anything, but when you really look at it, like, they have USB extension cords that they used to give with some of the systems. There's actually a little groove in there so that you can't use a normal USB key or cord in there unless it's an Apple product. certified USB, you know, keyboard or mouse, because they have that little groove built into it. It was just a slight deviation from the engineering specifications on what a USB outlet really is. So it's enough that where if you really wiggle it, you can actually get a normal USB in there, but it's enough of a pain in the rear end that it's not very easy to do. Trust me, we had at one point in time hundreds of these little extenders laying around in work, and we just had to find a way to kind of bend that little bump out of the way in order to make them work. So while it's a really cool idea to have a Lego Mac, unless you build it yourself, I'm pretty sure it's not going to actually happen. All right, and the last little story that we have for you here at the Caffeination Podcast in the TechCraft section is Amtrak contest runs afoul with security at Amtrak. Apparently, Amtrak has a contest that has an annual photo contest. Amtrak has been running since 2003. It's called, let me just see if I actually got this. I'm sorry. It's Picture Our Trains is what the contest is actually called. Sorry about that. But it's, where they're asking people to take pictures of their trains against scenic backgrounds or whatever it is, and submit them just in any kind of standard photo contest way. And the problem came when somebody was taking pictures of trains and they were arrested by Amtrak security. Police were alerted. Everything's on a heightened alert, you know, terrorism and all that. And it's something I was unaware of until I was actually going through Market East Station in Philadelphia, and I had my camera with me. It was right after PodCamp, so I took all these fantastic pictures of the inside of the station. I was like, I never bring my camera with me anywhere, so I'm going to use this to my, my advantage here. I love taking pictures of things in public, and even the crazy stuff that you never really see. And when I got back and I started showing them to somebody, they said, yeah, you know, you're really not allowed to take pictures in there. I was like, ooh, the thought had never occurred to me. So while I would not have refused to delete the pictures, I would have refused to delete the entire memory card because I had all the cool stuff from PodCamp on it, but I probably would have deleted the stuff from the train station if I was accosted like that. But apparently Amtrak has a history of accosting photographers who were taking pictures of their trains. And there was also a similar incident involving a JetBlue contest where they're asking people to make commercials for them, and then somebody refused to delete video off a camera. So just be sure that you're allowed to shoot wherever it is you are trying to shoot. All right, that about wraps it up for the TechCraft section here at the Caffeination Podcast. We're going to give you a quick rundown on the caffeine and food section. I did want to mention that in case you were listening to this on stream at any one of the many streaming sources available online, then you can find this and all the other fun episodes of the Caffeination Podcast located lovingly nestled over at www.caffination.com, beingcaffeination.com. We figured it was a good deal. All right, moving right along into the caffeine and food section here. You're going to start your year off right. Everybody wants to be green. 2009 is going to be just as green as 2008, except a little bit greenier. But there's a bunch of little tips and tricks that I've seen floating around, and I've myself have done some of these. But as 12 ways to recycle used coffee grounds, I'm just going to give you the quick little rundown and tell you what I think is bunk and what I think is all right. They're saying touch up furniture and other wood scratches with grounds and a Q-tip. This does not work. Just going to put that out there. Any dyed properties, or any properties that you would imagine would re-dye furniture, I've never been able to make it work. I actually did scratch, stained wood to see if I could re-dye it with coffee grounds, and it was an utter failure. Two, sprinkle around areas where pesky insects, slugs, and snails dwell to drive them away. This sort of works, but not as well as you would think. Number three is mix with soil as a natural fertilizer for your plants. This works fantastically. However, you need to have plants that like acidic soil. If they don't, then this is a bad idea. Number four is dye your clothing or paper. We're just going to move right along because you shouldn't be dyeing anything with coffee. That's just ridiculous. Number five is rub on into your dog as an organic flea dip. If I had a dog, smelled like coffee, I would probably follow the dog around a lot more than I would have to. Number six is fill old nylons and hang in your closet or fridge to repel odors. I'm pretty sure the wife would veto that one. Number seven is used to fill old pin cushions. This is a good idea. Remember, these are mostly supposed to be dried grinds. Let me just let you know there. Number eight is a scrub away grease and grime from pots and pans. If you use it in conjunction with sponges and wash rags and stuff like that, if you throw coffee grounds into the water, it becomes an instant Brillo pad, and it's non-abrasive to most surfaces. This is a fantastic tip. Number nine is throw on ashes before cleaning out a fireplace to reduce the dust from spreading. I never tried that, so I can't tell you. Number 10 is feed to worms to help your garden. Well, I put them in the garden. I'm assuming the worms eat them and everything looks beautiful. 11 is rub on your hands to eliminators. Yes, but then they smell like coffee. Number 12 is mix a quarter cup of grounds with one egg and massage onto your face like a mud pack. We're not going to talk about that one either because I'm not going to try it, and it just seems really weird. I don't like putting anything like that on my face. Specifically, I have enough egg on my face from the other things that I do. I don't really need to add to it. You know what I mean? All right, moving right along. We have an interesting little story. It comes out of Japan. Apparently, a gentleman who owns a orchard of Fuji apples decided to put apple stickers on his apples when they were young. And I don't know if you knew about this, but I did beforehand. If you put a sticker on an apple and the sun doesn't hit a certain spot, when it ripens, the area under the sticker actually retains its earlier and greener color. So he made an entire bushel of apples that have Apple logos and iPod logos on them. And there's no report as to what was done with these apples. And if he sold them, Apple would probably sue him for trademark infringement. So I thought it was awesome, but it was kind of sad that it happened at the same point in time, because you just know how that's going to end if he ever tries to market them. However, if he was giving them away, it might be kind of fun. All right, number 16 possible signs of a caffeine overdose. This is just a little public service announcement that I'm passing along to all of you. Things from severe stomach pain down to crazy things like seizures and insomnia. I'm leaving this story as it is. I'm going to let you draw your own conclusions. The only thing that I'm going to say to you is that just remember, everything in moderation. That's what I'm preaching for 2009. I don't have any fancy resolutions that I'm going to be talking about here on the show. The only resolution that I have is that I resolve to give you really cool and really interesting stuff as often as humanly possible here in the Caffeination Podcast for the entirety of 2009. You know, whatever the case may be, we're trying to get it out correctly. So, you know, just moderation for everything is another thing that I'm personally preaching. So hopefully you're not out there, you know, down in 7 or 8 Red Bulls at a shot. Hopefully nobody's like freebasing the caffeine powder that you can buy from ThinkGeek or anywhere else like that. But just remember, if you see any of these signs in your friends who happen to try freebasing that powder or doing any of the other crazy stuff out there, you might want to start contacting your doctor. All right, had another story sent in. It was brew coffee in your car with Road Pro coffee machine. Now, I personally know that long-haul truckers, I mean guys that are on the road for hours and days at a time, have an entire assortment of products that you would not imagine would run inside a vehicle. They're all powered off of the 12-volt DC current that comes off the battery. And these are put out there, and the funny thing about them is that they're normal appliances that have just been kind of tweaked around and kind of made to run on DC power. That's it. Or there's an inverter somewhere in them. So when I'm looking at these, there doesn't seem to be any kind of modifications to the coffee pots or anything to keep them from spilling, because they're not meant to be used in transit for the most part. You're not making popcorn. You're not using a toaster oven while you're driving. These are things for after hours. These are things for while you're stopped. So while I don't think that it's a really good idea to have a coffee pot in your car, if there's a different way of making coffee on the road, it would be kind of cool to sit there and play around with. And you could also kind of put this in conjunction with a link that I stole from the last show, but a car suggests coffee when you're tired. So if your car is telling you that you should probably have a cup of coffee, if you had one of these in your trunk, you'd be able to make that coffee without actually leaving your car. So just thought it was kind of cool and thought I'd pass it along. All right, the next little story that we have up here for you, that's a last real story and then a fun video at the end. But in Trip Inside Your Coffee Pot, there's a fun little story over there that basically runs down all the different ways in which people have made coffee. Just talking about, like, in the beginning, the original coffee pots, then the coffee pots with the screen, talking about the original percolators, which was actually patented on December 26th, for those of you who know. Then there's just a whole huge set of different little things, and I'm somebody who loves to read articles about the history of different things that we see now. So, because every once in a while, no matter how much you know, but every once in a while when you read one of these articles, you'll find a hidden gem, something that you were unaware of. For instance, when I was reading down to the espresso section, the first espresso machine reached the USA in 1927 and was installed at Reggio's restaurant in New York City. It is still there, and it is still working. That is something I was unaware of, and I think it is awesome. And it also gives you the the origin of the term pulling a shot, which I was actually kind of impressed with. The original espresso machines were actually spring-loaded, and you actually had to pull a lever towards yourself in order to actually create the enough pressure to actually make a shot happen. So that's where the term came from, pulling a shot. So it's just kind of fun. There's a whole huge bevy of different little nuggets like that that are buried deep in that article, so I pass it along to you for your enjoyment. And then the last little link that was sent in here was how Bond makes coffee, and it's a interesting little mashup of how the original, or one of the best Bonds ever, Sean Connery, would go about making coffee. The only problem with the story is that he doesn't actually ever drink it. It kind of explodes, so I just pass that along for your enjoyment. This has been a slightly longer edition, but hey, I had a lot of content to go over, and I would like to thank you for sticking with us through this episode here at the Caffeination Podcast. It has been a great joy to bring you the first of many episodes this year, and I just hope you'll keep coming back for the same kind of pain in the future. Alright, this has been, like I said, Caffeination number 299. This and all the other episodes like it are located lovingly nestled over at www.caffination.com. The Caffeination Podcast is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. We're also a proud Puzzle Piece production. To find out more about what that means, head on over to puzzlepiecepro.com. For all comments, feedback, suggestion, hate mail, anything else you'd like to fire off in my general direction, please feel free to email me at caffeination@gmail.com. I am almost all caught up with the email. I got everything up and set and ready to go, so I will be glad to respond, hopefully within a reasonable amount of time from here on out. Thank you very much for your patience. Thank you so much for listening, and stay caffeinated, people.